Hello, listeners. Today on burst.co.uk, we're going to talk about international cinema. I'm here with two very special guests on Studio One. We have MA cinematographer Brendan Senden. Hello.
Hello.
And we also have producer Catherine Peterson.
Hello.
So today here on Studio, we're going to talk about Danish cinema. We're going to discuss movies, actors, a bit about the history, and it's going to be very interesting. So I leave it to you guys.
Okay, so I propose we start by a little bit of history,
okay,
and then we move on to more recent stuff. Catherine, you're from Copenhagen, right?
I am, yeah.
So you know a lot of stuff about Danish cinema, right?
I know a bit.
If we go to the beginning of the Danish cinema history, it started roughly around 1896.
Yeah.
So as you might know, like the first movie screening was around 1895 in Paris by Brother Lumière.
Yeah.
And less than 6 months after that, the first screening came to Copenhagen in Denmark.
Keeping up.
Yeah, Denmark was really quick actually to develop its cinema industry. So they started by doing like what French people were doing, you know, very short documentary film, not a lot of interest. But by 1910, they started to shoot the first feature film. So there was this company called Nordisk Film, which still exists,
yeah,
as a matter of fact.
You can get internships there and everything. They're great.
They're pretty cool. Well, they established the first movie theaters in Copenhagen and around Denmark, and they had a slight problem. They didn't have anything to show. So what they did is they decided to shoot feature films, and they were like, if not the first to do so, the first to do it in the professional way they did it, so before the Hollywood studio system and everything. They did that around 1910. This is like the period where they really shot the first feature-length film, feature-length dramas. It was, of course, like silent movies. So
yeah. Which is also, I mean, I know that that's why Denmark was so big, because it was still silent and they could do a lot more international.
As a matter of fact, like those films were exported everywhere in the world and a lot of different markets. So it was really like Danish golden age, we can say. It was when they were like popular all around the world. Mm. Everybody would tune in to watch a Danish film. And actually, like the biggest cinema was in Copenhagen.
Really?
Yeah, 3,000 seats. So imagine 3,000 people coming in the
is
same room watching
there?
The movie.
Which cinema is it?
It's still there, but they did make like adjustment to it. Like, no, it's a lot of smaller hall, not a 3,000 wide seat, but it's like the Copenhagen cinema.
There's a lot of cinemas in Copenhagen.
It's called the Copenhagen cinema at the time. It was called like that.
Okay.
It's still around though. So it was like really like the golden age of Danish cinema. And it's not only Danish cinema. There was a lot of Danish and Swedish co-production. So you would sometimes see a Swedish actor in a Danish movie and the other way around, sometimes Norwegian actors as well. And those actors were sometimes like big stars. I don't know if you have like any film that come to mind when you think about the silent era of cinema.
Not films, but more actors. So I know Asta Nielsen was really, really big internationally, and her sort of famous dance scene where she's possessed or something. And then I know who, like, is he called Benjamin Christensen or something? Did a lot of films back then. Carl Theodor Dreyer is like the most famous guy, but he came a bit later than...
Yeah, he came a bit later, and he also like shot a few talkies, as we call them.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about him like a bit later.
Okay.
In fact. So yeah, what happened in the 1920s is two different things. First thing is like the war. It didn't have a huge impact on Denmark.
No.
So Denmark, I don't know how you feel about it.
We weren't really in it.
Yeah.
At first.
So what happened is that people tended to want to see like funny movie, more like comedies than melodrama like before.
Yeah.
But otherwise it didn't change much for the Danish cinema itself. What changed in the other end is that in the German occupied country, they couldn't screen like American or French movie or even English movie for that matter. So Danish cinema was shown over there. So it was kind of a good thing in a way for Danish cinema. But
well, you take, you know, take what you can get.
Yeah. Yeah. But after that, there was the 1920s depression. So the economy wasn't doing so well. Mm. People didn't have that much money to spend to go to the cinema. And Danes are huge moviegoers. So, for example, if we look at the number at the time, some movie would make as many as like 2 million tickets. And the Danish population is around 4 or 5 million.
At the time, I'm not sure. Like now it's 5-6 million.
So 2 million tickets is huge. It's like half the population going to the cinema, seeing that movie.
Yeah.
So there are like really heavy moviegoers. And there is like a real movie culture from this era of super silent movie. But after a few years, we have like the first talkies. The first talking movie is often said to be the jazz singer from 1927.
Oh yeah.
Which is not a Danish movie,
no,
it's an American movie. So, but they were really quick to catch on with the technology, and in 1930s they shot the first talking movie, and ironically it was a Danish-Norwegian co-production, and in the end it was shot and like recorded in Norwegian.
Very close languages.
It's very close. However, people around the world didn't understand it, so that's the end of the golden era.
Yeah.
People in the US were not interested anymore in listening to some Danish actor gibbering on film. So it's really like it hit the movie economy quite hard.
Mm.
And it's also around this time that some laws were brought in. One of these laws was, for example, that every cinema ticket would be taxed at 40%. So 40% of the money would go directly to the state, which wasn't appreciated at the beginning, but is now regarded as a really good thing because that's what allowed like the Danish Film Fund to fund a lot of really interesting projects. So at the time, there wasn't that much of a artistic consideration when making a movie. It was like entertainment. They were trying to sell tickets.
Yeah, and I think now we have a cinema that shows a lot of old films and art films, and it's only open because it's funded by the state. So, and that's because of all that, and it shows sort of history in Danish cinema history.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting as well because some of the law didn't resonate so well with the American market, for example. So Hollywood wasn't happy what was happening in Denmark.
Mm.
And they decided, for example, to forbid some movie from being screened in Denmark. Some movies such as Gone with the Wind were not screened in Denmark at the time. So people from Copenhagen would travel to Sweden to watch those movies. Those really strong nationalist laws were in place.
Yeah. And has that also something to do like when it's under the Second World War and they were occupied by the Germans.
By the German. And so what happened at the same time was that like German was screening all the movie. They didn't forbid foreign movie to be screened, but they would check that it was appropriate for the Danish audience before to screen them.
Yeah.
And Danish director at the time, they went on to make like really dark movies. So the movies wouldn't reference the war and the German occupation, because that would be forbidden, but it would like be a lot deeper and darker than the comedy you had before. And what happened in the 40s, Danish cinema wasn't popular abroad anymore, so it would focus on itself. It tended to be about Denmark, about Danes, about the life in Denmark. And during the war that shifted, that was like dark story of crime and murder that could be anywhere, basically.
Yeah.
You talked earlier about Carl Theodor Dreyer.
Yeah.
So Carl Dreyer is kind of an interesting character because he started doing movie quite early on. And his movies at the time were not a commercial success. He was seeing cinema as an art form rather than, you know, just entertainment.
Yeah.
For example, in 1928, he shot this movie in France, actually. He shot Joan of Arc, The Passion of Joan of Arc, which is not a classic, but at the time the reception wasn't that good. It's not like a easy comedy to watch.
Definitely not.
And after that, he shot a few more movies, and then for a few years, he couldn't shoot anymore because he wouldn't have money to shoot. So he worked as a journalist for a while. So one of the last movies he shot was called Gertrude. Mm. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've seen the word of his latest film, later films.
Yeah. So this film is like, it's a talking film. Mm. It's a talking film. It's still in black and white, but it's a very modern film in a lot of ways. And it's kind of a precursor of a new era of Danish film because it's shot in 1964. And around 1960, what happened is that television start to like have a lot of success in Denmark. So most Danes, instead of going to the cinema like 3 times a week maybe, they would go one time, maybe not even one time, and they would watch television. There wasn't money aside from the money from the government to shoot movies. So the government had a lot of power on what was shot and what was not shot. If the movie wasn't supported by the government, it wasn't going to be produced. It wouldn't have money at the time. And what they wanted to produce at this time was more socio-realistic films. So again, talking about Denmark, the difficulties in Denmark, stuff like that. This movie is quite different. It's quite lighter in a way. But because of what he had done before, he got the money to shoot it. So it's quite a cool movie if you have some time to watch
definitely.
It. So we won't talk about history much more. I just want to talk about Lars von Trier. So we're skipping a 40-year period in the history
of cinema right now.
We're skipping a period.
I think within Denmark, there's a lot of folk comedies and that kind of stuff, which is very happy, jolly and quite goofy and not really that good as national TV. But there were some in the 80s, a few films nominated for big awards and stuff.
Yes.
Still realism and...
Yeah, a lot of socio-realistic movie again.
Exactly.
And the 80s, we can think of Ingmar Bergman as well, a very well-known director, I think. But I think that's... From the beginning of cinema till the 50s, 60s, we see a shift and an evolution of Danish cinema that has a lot of consequence on the actual nowadays Danish cinema.
Mm.
During the 70s and the 80s, it starts to burgeon in a way, start to get where it's now, but it's not quite yet there. So I'm going to skip that period altogether. Talk about Lars von Trier. So why talk about him? Because when we think about 2000s and so Danish films, he's the one that everybody knows.
Yeah.
And he's the one that kind of put back Danish cinema on the international map. So he had a few awards and stuff like that for himself.
Yeah.
And he wasn't working alone. So Lars von Trier in 1995, 100 years after the creation of cinema, presented this crazy project called Dogme 95. So you know about Dogme?
Yeah, I know about Dogme. We talked about it in school and stuff like that. So it's quite popular.
Interesting, yeah. So it's important to say that Dogme is not a Danish idea. It's open for everybody. Some French filmmaker, they were really happy about the whole concept and tried to follow it as well. But it was initiated by 4 Danish filmmakers and one in particular, which is Lars von Trier.
Yeah.
And what it is, no details, but basically he presented this set of rules to make movies that were supposed to make truer movie, to strip movies from all the technical aspect of film and all the dramatic music and the false feeling and stuff like that, and to have just the raw material, the raw emotion of the actors on screen. He would, for example, state not to use a tripod when shooting a movie, not to use several sets, unless the actor is specifically walking from one set to the other and you see it in the movies.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff like that. Not to use props that were not where the actor was at the time.
Use natural light.
Yeah,
not have your name on it, which... they didn't really uphold, but...
It's actually quite interesting that none of them really uphold this rule of not being credited as a director on the movies. They were always credited. Yeah.
I mean, they need their money, I guess.
True. And they did bend a lot of rules. So if we watch at the list of Dogma movies, a lot of them don't respect all the rules of Dogma movies.
Yeah.
But a lot of them try to make cinema in a different way, have this like reflection on what they're doing, on the tool they're using to tell the story, and stuff like that. And it's interesting to see that on the Dogma movie list, some Dogma movies are not written. For example, some porn movie from the 90s, late 90s, were respecting all the rules of the Dogma movies.
But they're not.
But they were not credited as Dogma movies.
Is like the list, is it some, is it Lars von Trier that...
So, it's mainly Lars von Trier in charge of the list. So he's not the only one. He's not the only one. There are like four filmmakers involved in this list. They're all from Denmark, but Lars von Trier is the leading one. So the four filmmakers worked together on a project that screened the first day of the year 2000 on Danish TV. And basically the project was that they were all going to shoot a movie together, but they were shooting separately. So they all shot one storyline in the movie on the New Year Eve of 2000. And the next morning, the four movies were screened together on four national channels. And people would have to like switch between the channels to edit their movie.
I haven't seen it, but I sort of remember the whole the news around it. And it's just sort of a difficult thing because it was on the same time on four different channels. And you can't, if it's the same film, you can't really watch all of it. So it's quite funny.
Yeah, that's...
Funny concept.
That's what the critic said. That's as interesting as the concept might be. The film was a bit rubbish. But it's still an interesting concept that illustrates what they were trying to do, trying to like have this new approach to the medium movies that we knew for a long time. So it's kind of like the French New Wave in the cinema. They were really trying to do something different, something in a way cheaper, more easily accessible to young artists. Not like if you want to shoot a Hollywood movies, you need to be recognized, you need to have a lot of producer giving you a lot of money. If you're doing a Dogma movie, you can get a crappy camera and some actors and shoot it, basically.
Yeah, which is an idea. I mean, now with the phones, you can just do anything.
Yeah, actually, recently a movie was released that was shot on the iPhone.
Yeah, I did hear about that.
So yeah, it's true. It's interesting. But I think that Dogma is losing some speed. So nobody, we don't hear about Dogma that much. And Lars von Trier is not that much interested in having a new Dogma movie coming out.
No, I think if you look at his history of making films, he sort of creates a set of rules. I think I've heard an interview where he said he likes to be confined with his creativity, and more creativity comes that way. So he has, you know, the Dogville and Mandalay, which is completely different set of rules that strips everything from the story. And then before Dogma, he had his Europa trilogy, which is, you know, film noir and completely different again. And now with Nymphomaniac and Melancholia, it's sort of completely...
Yeah. So, do you have a favorite Lars von Trier movie, maybe?
I think I really, really, really liked Melancholia. Breaking the Waves is pretty, pretty, pretty good as well.
Melancholia would be my favorite as well. Yeah, he actually went to Cannes a couple of times from Melancholia, for example.
Yeah.
But managed to get himself a life ban from Cannes after saying some stupid stuff when he was drunk, saying some borderline neo-Nazi comment.
Was he drunk?
Yeah, well, people say it wasn't he was drunk. He's denying that he was drunk.
He might have been drunk.
Might have been drunk. He's denying it. It's not in his advantage to deny it, but
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway,
if you watch it, it is I mean, this is going to be controversial, but it is quite funny. And it is, if you see it from like Danish humor point of view, it's just a joke. It's not like, it's not anything, he's not meaning it to be controversial. And he should never take anything he says, you know, seriously.
Seriously, yeah. Yeah, well, I think that in the end it didn't work against him, this live band from Cannes, because it was a lot of like advertising, positive or negative, it was still advertising for his work and his movies. So he's doing fine now.
Yeah.
Before to move on to documentaries, I want to talk about one special movie from Lars von Trier called The Five Obstructions.
Yeah.
Do you know it?
I do know it, yeah.
Yeah. So quickly, the movie is about Lars von Trier getting in touch with his favorite director.
Do you want me to say the name?
Yeah, please.
Jan Let.
Jan Let.
Yeah.
He wants Jan Let to shoot a movie he already shot, but to shoot it with new obstruction or new rules he would have to respect, and to shoot it several times with different rules he would have to respect.
Yeah.
So did you like the movie?
I did like the movie. And I like Jan Let. Mm-hmm. I saw him once in Copenhagen. It was very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I did like the movie as well, but I could easily understand how some people would not like it, though. It's quite particular.
It is quite particular. But I just, their conversations is hilarious. I mean, I do understand why people, it is very special, but yeah, I think it's funny.
So that brings us to documentary.
I see you have The Act of Killing Up, which...
I have The Act of Killing Up.
Which is a good one. I don't think Danish documentary when I think that. I know it's, you know, because he's American, the director, but it's a Danish production, so...
So it's true, it's not shot in Denmark, it's not shot by a Danish director, but the production was mostly Danish, so... So you did see the movie, right?
Yeah, I've seen it, and I went to the European Film College, where he's a good friend, Joshua Oppenheimer, so he was there and did an interview as well when he had The Act of Killing Up.
So to quickly introduce the movie, the documentary, it's this filmmaker getting in touch with the ex-Khmer. So the Khmer, they were involved in the killings in Indonesia. They killed a lot of people. He got in touch with some of the leader of that movement and got them to reenact some scene of the killings they were taking part in. I really liked it. I thought it was really, really strong and really like powerful. Some critics did not like it. Some people said that it was inappropriate in a way.
Yeah, but you're gonna get that for most documentaries, that it's inappropriate. And having people standing in front of a camera boasting of having killed, you know, thousands of people, is always going to be very difficult to watch.
Yeah, some people were really shocked, and some people said that it was actually kind of a nod to killing, so that it was showing this main killer called Anwar in a rather nice light, knowing what he had done, so that it was like kind of shocking to see it and shocking to do it. But the filmmaker replied to that by doing this, he was showing in a way the impunity that was still in place at this time in this region.
Yeah.
It's interesting to notice that in the credit, a lot of the crew is credited as anonymous because they didn't want any repercussion from the old killers.
And I even think, so if it says that one of the directors is anonymous and it took him quite a while to sort of get that relationship up and going, and for them to actually tell the story to the public.
So it's also interesting to notice that the main director won a BAFTA for this movie, and when he collected his BAFTA, he was invited to speak in front of the audience. And in his speech, he was basically requesting for the UK and the US to recognize the responsibilities in the killings, to admit what they had done that had led to those killings.
Yeah.
This part of the speech was cut out when it was broadcasted. This is kind of shocking as well.
That's even sort of even more shocking than the actual documentary.
I do agree. eventually, like 2 years after the US did recognize the implication they had in the killings. I don't know about the UK. I know the US did and apologized for it. So that was for the documentaries. That's like my favorite. It's interesting to see that like recent Danish documentary are very world-oriented. They're going abroad and see what's happening abroad. And it's in contrast with what was done before. Denmark produced a lot of documentaries, and this is partly due to the fact that the government and the state has a lot of implication in what is produced in Denmark. Some critics say that this system is not ideal, but most people recognize it's still one of the most powerful tool to subsidize movies and documentaries, especially all around the world, and Denmark is maybe the country doing it the best.
Yeah.
So
it is, I mean, it is a sort of the interest that the government has, but for the most part, the government doesn't play too big a role, I think, in what kind of films they're allowed to make. We have a sort of free and liberal country, so it's not like you can't show that or that or that. It's becoming worse, but, you know, it used to be quite easy to get different subjects, like controversial subjects.
No, I would like to talk about a filmmaker that I really like, Anders Thomas Jensen.
Yeah.
So Anders Thomas Jensen is a scriptwriter. He only directed like 7 movies, I think. All his short movies were nominated for either Oscars or nominated at Cannes or big prestigious festival. One of my favorite one is The Green Butcher. So yeah, basically it's a story about 2 butchers wanting to open their own butcher shop, and it doesn't go as planned. It's a weird comedy, like the humor is not the mainstream American comedy humor, but it's really funny, so I would recommend it if you have some time to watch
it. There's a lot of sort of films from that period that's sort of in the lines of The Green Butchers, sort of the same kind of comedy. Like Adam's Apples.
Yeah, Adam's Apple is also really great. Yeah. You've seen it?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, loved it.
I loved it as well. So just to introduce the movie, Adam's Apple is about this ex-convict, this neo-Nazi and like really bad man, like wicked man, letting out of prison, and he has to spend some time in a church in the middle of nowhere in Denmark before to be totally out of jail. So it's like a conditional release program. He end up in a church where
the pastor
played by Matt Mikkelsen is slightly crazy, can we say
slightly.
That?
Slightly. All the people that religious slightly
crazy. Yes, all the
crazy.
People are slightly crazy. So there is also this foreign dude on the same program and this fat ex-tennis player sharing the church together. And yeah, it's slightly crazy. I love it.
But it's the same kind of humor.
It's exactly the same kind of humor. Yeah, yeah, it is. So I think that was Anders Thomas Jensen like to shoot, because all his movies are kind of the same humor.
Yeah.
Which I really like. So I would recommend to watch it.
Yeah, watch one, and then if you like that one, watch the rest.
In most of the film he shot, the main actor or one of the main actor is played by Matt Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
He played in a lot of movie.
Yeah, he's become very sort of international.
He started quite late on his career with Pusher. He wasn't young anymore, depending on what you call young. And before that, Matt Mikkelsen wanted to be a dancer. But Pusher is a trilogy of three movies about the drug scene in Denmark.
Yeah.
And Matt Mikkelsen was pretty brilliant in it. And he got a lot of other roles afterward. And he's now starring in this TV show from the US called Hannibal. So is Hannibal. But one film in particular that I wanted to talk about is Jagten.
Yeah, The Hunt.
The Hunt, yeah.
It was the kind of film where you can spend hours afterwards talking about it.
Yes. Yeah. So the film is about this cool teacher, well, preschool teacher accused of pedophilia. And he's living in a rather small town where everybody quickly learn about what he's accused of.
Yeah.
And life quickly turned very difficult for him in this small town. He has a son of his own that he's trying to kind of protect from the thing going on. Mm. And there is, during the movie, this kind of ambiguity. We don't really know at the beginning. We kind of guess that it's not true, and then we start to wonder, did he do something, did he not?
Yeah.
And it's really a powerful and interesting movie. It can be a bit controversial as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you find the subject itself is controversial.
But the way it's filmed is not at all. Yeah, true. But it can make for interesting discussions afterward. And it's a brilliant movie, I thought.
It's the same script, the same director as the guy who did Festen, which is probably one of the most famous Dogma films.
Yeah.
So if you liked Festen, it's quite in the same line as that.
So let's talk about TV, because Danish TV is also like a very nationalized process.
Mm.
But it produced a lot of great series and great documentaries. One series I want to talk about is Borgen. I thought Borgen was really interesting because it's a series about like politics and about what happened in the government. It's a mix between journalism, mystery and politics, but it's not about crime or whatever. It's about raw politics mostly. And yet it's really, really captivating. So when you start watching it, you can't help yourself but keep watching it.
Mm.
I really liked it. It's also like about relationship and two main character in the series are women.
Mm.
One young one older one, and they have like to combine politics and their family life. So it's also about like family life and stuff like that. It's really kind of broad. It's not just about politics. The main actress, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce her name.
Do you want me to pronounce it? Sisse Babette Knussen.
So she learned about dramas in Paris for quite a while. She stayed in Paris. And then she went on to play a few minor roles in some movie. Her breakthrough was around 2000.
Yeah.
But even though she wasn't very well known in Denmark, so fame really came along when she started playing the main politician in this TV series. We are following her, and we are following her ascent to power. In some way, I think that like House of Cards is slightly inspired by Borgen. The dramatic construction of the series is kind of similar. And
That's actually quite interesting. I haven't thought about that.
It shows something quite interesting is that Danish TV on a small budget, really small budget, do manage to do something quite similar to a huge budget HBO production. So that's what really struck me when I started watching both of those.
Mm.
And there are a lot of other like small production TV series that have a really like good value for their money. I'm thinking, for example, about The Killing.
Yeah, which got a American remake as well.
Yes, so
which is actually quite good.
I have to say, I don't know if it was worth doing a remake. Couldn't they just subtitle it and screen it?
Americans don't like, you know, they want it in English.
They want it in English.
But I wasn't mortified when I watched it. It's actually quite a good remake, and they've made it their own in some kind of way.
The original is also like really good. I would also recommend the original.
Yeah, of course.
If you have the choice, probably go for the original. It's really a great production, so you don't feel like you're watching something cheap. And once again, it's not only this TV series that was like remade in the US. So a few Danish films got remade as well. I'm thinking about Let the Right One In, for example. And The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which is like with Swedish actor, but also like a Danish co-production, is also a great film I would recommend.
Yeah.
It was also remade.
And if you want to see the rest of the series, watch the Swedish ones.
Yeah, but again, the US film is really good. So if you watch it, you're not like, did they dare destroy this movie? It's really good. And the director of the Swedish movie was actually really unhappy about the American movie and said that he thought it was a ripoff and that he was really disappointed because a Scandinavian movie, it makes money on the opening week, of course, but it also makes a lot of its money over time when people buy the DVD, when TV broadcasts the film and stuff like that. And he said that, of course, he was going to suffer from the American version that would like steal some of its audience of the film. True. So that it was really like pointless to do that and not a good move from Fincher's.
And David Fincher is a good director, so I'm surprised that he would just sort of take exactly.
Yeah, it's slightly different in the end. It's shorter, more dramatic maybe, and you see that there is more money involved. But yeah, it's really similar. But as Fincher said, inspired from the book, so it makes sense that it's also like really similar because they're both based on the same book. So I thought we could finish by listening to a song from a Danish composer.
Yeah,
and it's actually a song from the Millennium Trilogy. So not a Danish film, appropriately speaking, but still it's Danish cinema in a way. And the composer, Jacob Gross, is definitely Danish.
Okay.
The song is called Would Anybody Die For Me? And I think it's in the first Millennium Trilogy movie.
Yeah.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So let's listen to it. So that was Would Anybody Die For Me by Jacob Grof. I don't know.
Graf.
And it's kind of representative to a certain Nordic atmosphere. It's slow and dark, which is in a way representative of this Scandinavian cinema culture.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful song.
It is beautiful, yeah.
So before to call it a day, I just wanted to quickly talk about Nicholas Winding Refn. Refn. He's the director of Drive, so a lot of you may have seen Drive. It directed Bronson and Only God Forgive as well.
Pusher,
yes, Pusher. And Valhalla Rising, even though I did not like Valhalla Rising at all.
I haven't watched it, but I really want to watch it because there's no dialogue. Right?
There is no dialogue. No. Well, a bit of dialogue, but not in a language you would understand. Yeah. So basically, there is no dialogue.
And it's Mads Mikkelsen again.
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen playing the main character, which is like, well, I won't talk much about it. I don't have anything good to say about it. I really didn't like it. I was really disappointed. So I saw Drive. I saw Only God Forgive, which is, in my opinion, like a really good movie, too. Very powerful movie when there isn't a lot of dialogue, but it's very strong and it's in a way subtle. Valhalla Rising wasn't any of that, in my opinion. But anyway, his next film, The Neon Demon, is going to come out soon, and it was selected to screen at Cannes Film Festival in 1 month time.
Yeah.
And some people say it might win. The main actress in the movie is Elle Fanning, and the movie again is in English, not in Danish.
Yeah, he sort of moved.
Yeah, his latest movie, Drive included, are not very Danish-like.
No, I think he's more inspired by sort of 70s American films. And
while we are talking about Cannes Film Festival, I wanted to talk about the Afghan film director Shahrbano Sadat. I probably killed that name.
And I can't help you.
Yeah. So it's not a Danish film, but it was produced by Denmark. It's at Cannes Film Festival also, but not screened in competition. It's screened for La Quinzaine des Réalisateurs.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen the movie, but I'm really looking forward to see it. I think it's going to be quite good. And it's not often that you have like an Afghan movie screening in an international festival. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so that was a bit about Danish cinema. Guys, thank you very much for this talk. It was lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for listening.
So, yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed. My name is Liana and you're listening to buzz.co.uk. See you next time with more international movies to talk about.